So, good morning, my fellow early risers. So, I'm really excited to be talking about the work that we've been doing at IBIS on public funding for abortions in cases of rape, incest, and life endangerment. I have no disclosures to report. So, some background about Medicaid restrictions for abortion. The Hyde Amendment was passed in 1976. It's renewed every year. And basically, what it does is prohibit federal Medicaid funding for abortions in cases of rape, incest, and life endangerment. And as you can see from this map, there are some states that expand funding for abortions for most cases. Those are the states in light green. But most states, which are the purple and dark green here, restrict Medicaid funding to these few exceptions. So at IBIS, we decided to investigate the impact of policies like the Hyde Amendment that restrict abortion funding for low-income women, and we wanted to look at the impact on both abortion providers and low-income women. So to date, we've completed two studies looking at this. The first one is a study of in-depth interviews with abortion providers. We conducted 66 of them with abortion providers in 17 different states. And in those interviews, we asked providers just about their experiences working with Medicaid and how those experiences impacted their clients. The second study that we've been doing is what we called a secret shopper of Medicaid. So we called the Medicaid offices in those 17 states where we did interviews with abortion providers, and we called them twice. The first time we called and asked if I was a Medicaid enrollee and was raped and needed an abortion, could I get it covered? Then we waited a week or two, and we called back and said, if I'm a Medicaid enrollee and my pregnancy is life-endangering, can I get my abortion covered? excuse me. So this is a look at the states where we collected data from. In five of the states in blue are states that say that they provide Medicaid funding for abortions in all or most cases, and the rest of the states have various restrictions on abortion funding. To analyze all the qualitative data, we transcribed all our interviews verbatim and conducted a thematic analysis of the data using Atlas TI. And to analyze quantitative data and responses to closed-ended questions, we just input the data into a database and perform basic calculations in Excel. So I talked a little bit about this work yesterday, so I'll just briefly mention a summary of the results of our interviews with the abortion providers. So a lot of what we found was just general confusion from the abortion providers about what circumstances Medicaid really will cover abortions. And that confusion was increased by the proliferation of HMOs under Medicaid and general bureaucratic funding procedures. There was a lot of confusion about exactly how to get cases funded, so what form to send in, who to send it into, what box to check off. And a lot of providers felt like it was really kind of futile to work through that process because Medicaid frequently rejected claims that they considered should qualify for funding. For the few providers who were successful in securing funding, the reimbursement rates for abortions specifically were so low that it kind of became not worth it to go through the process. And because of this collection of challenges, most of the providers we talked to had given up working with Medicaid and no longer contracted with them. So this quote comes from a really politically active provider who has been in the field for well over 15 years and really sums up all the challenges that providers told us they experienced. She says, "We've never been reimbursed by Medicaid for an abortion. We have trouble with gynecology getting reimbursed appropriately, and a number of times we have to turn things back in. The average is three times that we have to do paperwork before it's all accepted. And for abortion, we may try seven different things, and then we give up because it's not worth the staff time anymore. It's just at some point, how damaged is your head from that brick wall?" I will give you some silver lining, though, and that is in two states, we heard that the funding mechanisms with Medicaid were working really well, and those are New York and Oregon. So this quote comes from a provider in Oregon saying, "We're really lucky in Oregon. We have this coverage that the majority of people who can't come up with the money can get the Oregon health plan. I think we're really lucky in that circumstance, and I have to remember how incredibly difficult that is in other states." And just to say that Oregon and New York had really great experiences working with Medicaid, but they were far from perfect. For example, Oregon health plan, immigrants can't qualify for Oregon health plan, so there are still some needs of the population not being met. Turning now to our secret shopper of Medicaid. So very generously estimated, about 66% of our Medicaid respondents correctly told us that coverage for abortion was available in circumstances of rape or circumstances of life endangerment. And I say generous because a lot of times when they said, yes, I think it's covered, but I'm not sure how, or I'm not sure what you would do, or though it technically may be available, I'm not sure that you'll actually get it. So it came with a lot of caveats. One of the most consistently mentioned caveats is this issue of documenting the circumstances of abortion. So well over half of our respondents told us that if it was a circumstance of rape, that we would need a police report, and if it was a circumstance of life endangerment, that we would need some kind of documentation from a healthcare provider. Now, the troubling thing about that is that in a lot of the states where we were making these calls, there is no law saying that that kind of documentation is required, and in fact, there are some laws prohibiting requiring that documentation. But in practice, it looks like Medicaid is still asking for this documentation. A large majority of our respondents, 81%, could give us information about copays. I'll caution that didn't seem to be directly related to knowing information about abortion, but just generally being able to respond to information about copays. So saying things like, well, the copay for an outpatient procedure is X, so I reason out that the copay for an abortion would probably be X. And most of the calls, we did kind of a qualitative assessment of the calls, and most of them were pretty neutral. You know, people were just doing their jobs, giving us information, but in 9% of the calls, we coded them as really negative. All of these calls were in states with restrictions on Medicaid funding, and all of them were extraordinarily negative experiences, people hanging up on us, cussing at us, and just being really rude. So going back to this issue of folks not being entirely sure of how to secure Medicaid funding, a number of the callers really wanted to make sure we got the information that we needed, and so spontaneously referred us to places for other information. The most common place to refer us to was the physician providing the abortion. We were also frequently referred to state Medicaid websites and occasionally referred to other Medicaid offices or staff. The interesting thing about this physician referral issue is one we already knew from talking to physicians in those states that they were not clear on how to get Medicaid funding for abortions and often had trouble talking with Medicaid about how to get that funding. And a lot of these Medicaid respondents told us about a physician line, that physicians can call Medicaid directly on the physician line and get information that you can't get from the patient line, and that there's no way for the patient to get the same kind of information that the physician can get. So this quote comes from a respondent in Wisconsin who said, as a recipient, you can't get that information. We have the basics that we're told. Bottom line, with things that are questionable coverage, we have the provider call. So when we step back and look at these findings, we realize that one big gap in our research are voices of women. We've heard from providers, we've heard from Medicaid. Now we're moving forward to doing interviews with low-income women. We began conducting those interviews in October of this year, and we're recruiting women from four states, Arizona, Florida, New York, and Oregon. And we're recruiting women from those states because they represent the best and worst case scenarios according to the 17 states where we've collected data. My apologies to those of you from Arizona and Florida, but you are the worst case scenarios with Medicaid practices. New York and Oregon, as I've mentioned, are the best case scenarios. And we thought it would be interesting to look at these extremes and learn what Medicaid practices are working for women and which ones aren't. The interviews that we do focus on how women have paid for their abortions and their general knowledge and opinions about Medicaid funding laws. To date, we've completed almost half of the interviews that we aim to complete. We're hoping by the end of the year that we'll finish about 80 interviews, so 20 in each state. And I'll give you a look at some very, very early findings from these interviews. So largely women report being unaware of Medicaid funding laws both in their state and nationally. They're very surprised to learn about the Hyde Amendment when we ask them about that. And most women have assumed that their insurer would cover an abortion, but when they call their insurer to confirm or find out when they're scheduling the abortion, they tell us that they receive inconsistent and unhelpful information and end up relying on the provider who gives them the abortion for that information, or just friends who've previously had abortions and give them information as well. For those women who are unable to secure insurance coverage of the abortion, they describe some really extraordinarily drastic measures that they go through in order to pay for the procedure, often delaying the abortion by several weeks. And interestingly, women's opinions about their own funding experiences don't seem to directly relate to their opinions about other women's experiences, by which I mean someone will describe just a really terrible time trying to get their abortion funded and feeling like it was really unjust that their insurance wouldn't cover the abortion, that it was unfair, that they wished that it would have, but not believing that Medicaid should generally cover insurance for other low-income women. And the idea behind this when we probe women about it is that women should be responsible for their sexual and reproductive health decisions and quite literally have to pay for those decisions. So this quote comes from a woman in Florida who had assumed that Florida Medicaid would cover her abortion, which it doesn't, except for in cases of rape, incest, and life endangerment. So she thought her first step, she was uninsured, her first step would be to get Medicaid. So she describes going through this process of having to go to this specific women's health clinic that was only open for a few hours once a week. And she says, at the time the job I was working conflicted with it, I knew I was pregnant for 2 months before I was even able to go in so I could do the Medicaid paperwork. After she's enrolled, she's told, to attempt to get Medicaid to pay for it would probably take me the duration of the pregnancy. This quote comes from a woman when we asked her, once she learned that Medicaid would not cover her abortion, how she came up with the $500 that she would need for her abortion. She told us the clinic reduced her abortion by $100, she borrowed some money from family and friends, and then she skipped out on her $200 electric bill. The electric company turned her electric off, and the impact was that you can't have groceries when you don't have electricity. Hot water heaters are electric, ice cold showers, no groceries in the fridge. I spent a lot of money that I could have spent on paying my electric bill or being able to provide better for myself and for my children, because they told me Medicaid wasn't going to help me out and I had to go ahead and just spend my money. And I wish I could say this was the worst story we heard, but by far is not the worst. So far what we found is the findings between the two studies that we've completed have been highly consistent with one another. We're still very early in our interviews with women. We're starting to see that those findings are relatively consistent with what we've done. And putting the collection of these findings together, we believe that continued efforts to expand public funding for abortion and remove restrictions on Medicaid coverage for abortion are needed to ensure equitable and timely access to abortion for all women in the U.S. Thank you. And I have time for a couple questions. Yeah.
Hi, thank you for your presentation.
Thanks.
I'm from one of the lucky students that actually covered this, but of course it's not without problems. I have two questions. One is whether you looked at all about different types of providers or tried to take that into account, and the other is whether you're working at all with abortion funds. I served on the New York Abortion Access Fund, actually with Vlad Fuentes, and it was really clear just how much the provider was an intermediary between access to Medicaid and other resources. And in our city, for example, PPM, Planned Parenthood of New York City, has five on-site facilitated enrollers that will immediately enroll you in Medicaid and get your abortion covered and have it down pat. But if someone called us who happened to, say, walk into another clinic that's in their neighborhood and want an abortion, they wouldn't be told anything.
Mm-hmm.
They would be told to call us at the abortion fund. They wouldn't be, they would say, okay, cough it up, $6.95, So I wondered if you've looked at that at all.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we have looked at differences by provider type as far as like abortion facilities, doctor's facilities, hospitals. Hospitals, of course, have a lot of support they have whole departments that can go after Medicaid for funding, so they seem to have a little bit more success, though they are the smallest representation in our sample. Most of our sample is our abortion clinics. And there is a huge difference, as you're suggesting, between clinics who are relatively small in rural areas, perhaps, who don't have this kind of infrastructure to enroll folks in Medicaid. So part of what, there's also a lot of differences state by state. So we've started to do state by state analyses for folks working in those states to really, you know, work closely with the data. We've done some in Pennsylvania and Florida. They're on our website if you're interested, but we're probably gonna move forward and do some more so that folks can work with findings directly specific to their state. Yeah. We're currently working with some with providers and the funds in different states to figure out strategically the best way to do this. One of my colleagues keeps telling me to call 60 minutes, but we're not going to do that. We're thinking about holding kind of small state-based meetings with the providers and figuring out like where the access point is in Medicaid to say you're not even following the law. And we're also trying to figure out if that's the fight we want to fight. And healthcare reform has complicated that a little bit. So we're trying to figure out how to be strategic and really looking to the providers and the funds in each state to tell us how they can best use our research. Yeah. That's a great suggestion and something that we're, through these interviews with providers and these secret shoppers, we were able to pull out some of those best practices, and I think one of our next steps probably next year is to look at some of those, but we may have to go back and do some additional data collection directly from Medicaid, if they'll talk to us, I don't know. Great, thank you.